Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
I come from, you know, rave culture. No lights on me, stand in the corner and play. I very much believe that identities are in flux all the time. I do not believe in stoic people who are always themselves. I mean, you can be always yourself, but if it doesn't change, then you're not. Because the scene was so small, there wasn't this thing about competition because none of us were going anywhere. I looked at all these old posters and press cuttings and I was like, if I didn't know this person, what would I imagine him to be like? You can do whatever. You can be as experimental or commercial or whatever in the way you produce dance music. But if people don't dance to it, it doesn't work.
You're listening to Pop, The History Makers, with me, Steve Blame.
Per Martinson, welcome. In some way, I could make a joke about that. I'm not sure what personality I'm talking to today. But I will keep away from that for a little bit. Maybe we come back to it in a second. I want to start with the PhD that you did for the Arctic University. This was started a few years ago. Can you tell me on the outset what you were attempting to achieve at the beginning?
Yeah, well, I was very much into the physicality of sound at the time. And I'd started looking at, there was a lot of stuff on the internet about, you know, sound and geometry, how sound can alter structures in physical objects. And I was like, yeah, that would be kind of cool to explore that, because I've always been into very loud and bass heavy music, and the physicality of music has always been like central to what I've been doing. And and I'd seen like experiments in Tokyo getting small objects to levitate by the use of sound pressure, and I was like, yeah, that'd be cool to have, you know, people levitating when you play and stuff. Only I discovered soon that kind of sound pressure would kill people, so it would be kind of silly to do that. But I was very much into learning and researching what sound could do with the physical world. So that was what I set out to do.
So, okay, so you went along a certain path. And then you talk about, and I think it was probably one of your professors, a woman who had said to you, where's the personal in this, in your research? What did that moment mean to you? And how did you then change what your research was?
Yeah, well, I've always been working on everything I've been working on. It's been looking at something interesting and try and make some sound, music, art, whatever out of the feels that that triggered something in me. So I'd never thought about looking at who I was in the whole thing. I come from, you know, rave culture. No lights on me, stand in the corner and play. At least the old rave culture. So it was kind of, it was very challenging to try and look at what's my role in all this. And my project was called The Search for Resonance, which for me was only about physical resonance, I guess, in the beginning. And then I started thinking, what about emotional resonance? What about the reason we scream like babies with sound? What do we want to achieve? Why do we need people to listen? And I started questioning all these things and turning the attention into myself. And like, so why am I doing this? Why have I been spending my whole life making noise? And why, you know, why all this fuss about noise? And simultaneously, there was the 30th anniversary of my Mental Overdrive project. And I was doing a project where I was collecting memorabilia from all over the years, anything, press cuttings, photos of my friends and myself playing. And I started going backwards for the first time in my life to look at my own career and my own personal life. And I started relating that to the resonance concept. But I couldn't kind of... I can never stop. I always want to do something new with stuff, and I find things very boring. So the more I looked at my actual story, I was like, wouldn't it be more fun if it was all different? And I got back to when I was my early 20s. I left my hometown and ended up in the UK, and I thought about those years, and I was like, there was a lot of options. I could have done something completely different. And I started thinking, what would have happened if I'd made little choices early in life? And what kind of music would I make if I had developed different sides of myself in different ways than that what actually happened? So that was the kind of way I could relate the whole personal thing and my own story to what I was doing, to my project. And so I did that. I went back and kind of reinvented three different versions of myself.
So how did you base the three different versions? Because one is essentially the fool. You've got fire, water, and the fool, haven't you, essentially, I think. So why did you choose those, and what do they represent for each of the sub-personalities of you?
Well, I thought everything got very complicated very quickly, and I needed to have something clear to work with, like a template or something. And all my research about sound, geometry and frequency and all this, if you start getting into that rabbit hole, you soon end up in everything from research on psychedelics to very ancient ideas about sound to there's so much in there. And I was like, I need to make it simpler in order for it to work. And I thought, what if I made very kind of very clear and archetypical versions of myself? And I thought, okay, you have like an emotional side, you have a very active, you know, or moving forward very quickly side, you have the observant side. And I found that in some areas of mysticism, Western mysticism, it was easy for me to use a kind of Trinity model to see the old ideas about the yin and the yang and the spirit that observes how these forces play out in the world.
So tell me about each of these sub-characters, as it were. So to start off, tell me about the fool, because for me, there's something of, I mean, you know the book Fahrenheit 451, where the fireman is burning books at the temperature of 451 degrees. And at one point he picks up a book and he starts reading it, and it changes the whole of his life. And in a sense, the fool for me has a little bit of that in it. Tell me how you saw it.
Well, I imagined myself in that story to never approach a career in music and never embrace my creative side. So I started writing in my kind of fake autobiography that I never left my hometown, and I settled down very early in life, and I had I worked as an electrician and put a lid on everything that was creative. Anything inside me that wanted to come out had to be stopped. And I imagined what would that make me? And of course, this version gets a massive midlife crisis and everything just falls apart. And I thought it would be interesting to make music with that kind of outlook that I know nothing. I don't have any skills. I've never done anything in my life, and everything is experimental. So, I shift techniques all throughout all these years. I always shift techniques in how I make music because I get bored. And I thought it would be great to just have this mindset to anything can happen. So that's what I did. I started doing, working on different setups and in my studio with this kind of, the fool that knows no danger, has no plan. You just go forward and see what happens.
But what parts of you are in that character of the fool?
Well, I guess it's that urge to always do something new, to always try and challenge what you know. And I think that goes for, it's in what you do, but it's also in life. You can never stop developing sides of yourself. So you have to kind of try and see what happens if you set fire to something or if you do something very unexpected.
But the fool only turns into part of you when he has a crisis.
Yeah, I think that would have, if I were to put a lid on my creativity, or I think maybe most people, if you kind of keep things in, they will force themselves out. And I think that in that part of the story, I think it's kind of inevitable that the very rigid barriers he has made around his life in a very unhappy relationship with a kind of mundane reality, he has to break out. So if he can't do it himself, then life will break him out.
Okay, now the fire sign is the mental overdrive character. So tell me what in that is you and what isn't you then?
Well, that's kind of very close to the bone because it's kind of almost, I could very easily relate to the kind of always moving forward, never looking back. In love with speed and loud music, as in moving fast, and taking a lot of risks, and a very active energy in a way that always wants to move. And I've always it's very close to how I lived my life. Very restless. Very, I could relate very much to that. But that's the only part of the project where I pulled in something that actually existed. Like all the traces of what I've been doing as mental overdrive since 1990. I looked at all these old posters and press cuttings, and I was like, if I didn't know this person, what would I imagine him to be like? And how would this music, what kind of expectations would it trigger? Especially the early stuff that I put out. So I was like reimagining that side of myself in free play with no boundaries.
It's hard for me to imagine someone who reaches a certain age and hasn't reflected and looked back before, but you say you hadn't looked back. I mean, I find that really difficult to accept, to be honest.
Okay. Well, I was always, I mean, I must have looked back, but I was always, always had this idea that we're born with the eyes in front of our heads, and that's the reason There's a reason for that. You have to turn your head in order to look back, and it's like, you have to use your muscles. And I've always been very, I mean, I grew up in the aftermath of punk and new wave, and I'm very much into the futurist ideas very early, and the whole idea about the future becoming fantastic has been central in my life. So, I mean, it's been, I always believe that there's something fantastic is going to happen soon. And that's been a driving force. I don't know if it's optimism, because I'm not 100% optimistic, but it's still a driving force that soon something fantastic will happen and everything will change.
Now, the neon teardrops is the water sign. And that is something which is really fascinating, because it's also about your inner and outer identity. So tell me a little bit more about that.
I mean, I'm very emotionally driven as a person, but still, it's easy to forget. It's easy to move too fast to feel properly. And I discovered that I had become somehow, somehow forgotten sides of myself. And what I discovered in my musical history when I went back is that even if I've been working with electronic dance music and at times very hard music, I was like, before that, I was very much into melodic synth pop and all this 80s music that formed me. And I was like, so where did all that go? When I look back, I was like, what happened to all that? And I started imagining myself maybe nurturing those aspects of myself more and expressing them. And then I went on this third route to see how that could have shaped me if I had focused and developed that way. So the musical project there is kind of looking back, trying to imagine what kind of music I would have made over the last 30 years if I had not chosen another path. And now what I've been doing now is just kind of recreating that story musically.
But it was also about finding a feminine side.
Oh, yes. Definitely.
So tell me about. The thing is, as a gay man, I think I've have an advantage where I, in a sense, younger people today are very aware of this, and people from my generation, which is before your generation, weren't. But if you're a gay man, then you really are confronted with your sides and your feminine side. So you have to you look at that. So how was that for you, and what did you discover about yourself?
Well, I discovered that if I looked at myself from like everything is so much about duality these days, and even the old ideas that are, when I went back to the yin and the yang and the masculine principle, the feminine principle, and all these like ways of sorting different soul energies or whatever you want to call it, and I was like, there seemed to be an imbalance here. There seemed to be you've been living your life very much expressing the active sides of yourself and sometimes not standing up for what you feel in a way. And when I discovered that, I was like, that's very wrong. I can't live like that. I need to be a whole person. I need to have support for my different the different sides of my personality. So what I did, I the first thing I did was to try and get a picture of myself. What is my feminine side? And the early AI photo altering algorithms were out there. So I was like, okay, how do I look as a woman? So I dressed myself in digital drag and tried to get to know myself, because visualization is so, it's so effective in a way. And that was, to me, that was such a nice way I don't know. It felt like I learned something different while looking at myself in a different way. And I started following that path into, so what are your so-called, I mean, I don't believe in this polarity, duality thing. I think that's the big problem these days. That's the big problem politically as well. Certain nations have like this two-party politics. And I'm from a country where we're luckily, at least we have like a rainbow of political parties that together work in order to change things. And I thought the same thing would be very true about being a modern male, if that's a word. I was like, I need to open up all my sides in order to be a full person. And suddenly I started looking into the role of being male. I mean, I'm a middle-aged male. I need to find a new way of looking at myself. And I think the method I ended up using was so easy to follow. It's very simple. And I discovered my old, when I grew up, I looked at my old pictures now. I was very androgynous in my appearance. And I guess I was not later in life. Life happens and I wasn't as vain as I used to be. So I don't know. It's just, it was a beautiful process in discovering that I had forgotten sides of myself that were very important to me and that should have been expressed also in the music.
How has that changed you in the way that you interact with other people, or has it changed you even?
I believe it has. I mean, I always looked at myself as a very free speaking person, but I discovered that I haven't been as open as I thought I was about everything. And I think, I don't know, there might be too much openness as well. Because if you say anything, like I often do, you get into hurting other people, and I thought you need to express everything that's part of you, but I found it easier to do that through the music, and through the writing of these stories, it was a very nice way of role playing, so I could go 100% into the different personalities and see how they would work musically. It was very freeing to have these kind of method acting ways of making music, because that's also a thing that at the time I started this project, I was like, okay, I've been doing this for 30 years plus. You start getting these ideas of who you are as an artist, whether you like it or not. And breaking out of that, I mean, I always liked breaking out of things, but breaking out of that can sometimes be difficult because you don't have like a method. You don't have like something that can open you up to unexpected possibilities. And I was like, if I could imagine myself being different than I've been acting over the last few years, then what would happen musically? And suddenly I did stuff that I'd never done before.
I mean, I find it fascinating. I want to come to the music in a minute, obviously, but I find it fascinating in terms of the personalities, because as you know, I believe that music is created through the wounds of the childhood trauma, and it connects to people through their own trauma. And that's how and why musicians like yourself can make such a strong connection to their audience, because it's an absolute on a very deep emotional level. But by developing these characters, it's almost like you're avoiding yourself. Do you see what I mean? It's like you've created something which is fictional generally, and it's that is a way of actually avoiding looking at your own, maybe your own childhood trauma, or maybe actually not that you're afraid of doing that, but maybe that you don't actually want that to be out there.
Yeah, Maybe I think. Well. Now that I've kind of I've done my the university project ended in a year ago, and now I'm kind of stuck with three different personas. And I mean, of course, I am all of this and nothing. It's like it's all parts of myself, and I'm writing into it some truth, some fiction. And but I think you're very right about the this connection thing, and that's the resonance thing, that if you really look at something very deep within yourself, it will connect with other people. If you're superficial, it will also connect, but not in the same way.
I mean, I think the resonance, and this is what's really fascinating about music and sound, is that the connection to the other person through the sound is the medium to make that connection. And what's fascinating about your project is the different journey of the sound that you are now creating from what you created before. So when did you first realize that sound has an impact on an audience, and I presume it was fairly early on?
Yeah, well, I always made noise as a child, I guess. Not always, but I always wanted to make noise, and I kind of tried to play drums on anything I found, and I started playing in bands when I was in my early teens, and we played our first gigs when I was like 16 or something. So the kind of the impact of on an audience was, I discovered that around that time, that how what you did and how you expressed yourself through sound, what it did with other people. And I think I never stopped, really. I was like, I need to do more of this. But that was always like an outwards movement. And the whole reflection part that I've been going through now I never thought about the other way around. I just wanted to make more sound.
Were you brought up in a creative household?
Nobody in my family were playing music, but there were record collections. I think it was about three when I sat on the floor and played all these like 7-inch singles of my mum's collection on her portable record deck. And I even remember that was like, I discovered something very important in my life quite early.
What specifically did you discover? I mean, obviously, you know, you heard music and that was a discovery in itself, but I just wondered if there was something that you can specifically hone in on and say what you discovered.
I guess it was just that the way it put me in this emotional state, I guess. This kind of just experiencing, just being quiet, experiencing, getting it all in, and like almost meditating. It made me calm in a way. I think that's the... And ever since, I was, you know, I was collecting records from then on almost. No, I think I bought my first album for my own money when I was 6 years old.
My parents were very old-fashioned in the extent that they didn't put much weight on a creative life. They always would say you need to look after money first and not after creativity, which, you know, my thinking is obviously completely different from when I was young and I heard that and went on a different path. What were your parents like, and what support did you receive in terms of actually developing into a creative person?
Well, I was told that I could do anything as long as I took responsibility for my own actions. But I was at the same time very rebellious and doing my own thing in spite of everything. So I was also brought up with the common sense that you need to take care of yourself. You need to have a job. Both my parents were none of us were coming from like wealthy backgrounds. And I think for me, it was this drive. Maybe that's the kind of fire thing that I would have done it anyway. I just did stuff. I just, I was in no doubt that I would do music and that would be my life. And whoever told me otherwise were basically idiots, because I knew this is what I'm going to do.
That drive comes from somewhere. And I mean, you've obviously now looked into these characters and parts of yourself. Have you sort of worked out where that drive may have come from? Because often it does come from a childhood trauma in some way. And trauma is a very big word, and it can be a very small thing.
Well, if you can define boredom as trauma, I guess that's. I had fun as a kid, but there was always something missing. It was like, I mean, I was a child in the 70s, and all I remember was that everything was kind of brown or dark gray, and there was not much furniture, and there was not much going on except like one radio channel being on. I found my childhood like a really blank canvas that I needed to fill with stuff. And I guess that drive comes from, I guess it came from boredom, actually. You need to do stuff. You need to create stuff because it's not there already. And if I grew up somewhere else, I mean, I grew up in a small Arctic town. It's quite thriving these days with both culture and everything. But when I grew up, it was quiet and it was dark most of the time. And I was like, okay, we have to do something about this. I have to do it myself.
Ah, the sizzle of McDonald's sausage. It's enough to make you crave your favorite breakfasts. Enough to head over to McDonald's. Enough to make you really wish this commercial were scratch and sniff.
And if you're a sausage person, now get two satisfyingly savory sausage McGriddles, sausage biscuits, or sausage burritos for just $3.33. Or mix and match. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
You're listening to Pop, The History Makers, with me, Steve Blame.
When I was 13, I was a massive fan of David Bowie. That was in 1972, when Ziggy Stardust came along. And for me, he represented more than just the music, because as a gay teenager, he represented a society where I felt I could fit into and be part of. When you were a teenager, who were these people, and what did they represent for you?
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
When I was a teen, my first huge discovery in music was when I was about 11 or 12, when I discovered Kraftwerk. Because I was so much into technology, I had all these like electronic kits lying around and building stuff and making stuff. And when I could connect that to music, that was a big thing. But that was not like a personality thing. It was more like their vision fitted my dreams. It was the whole, the future is going to be fantastic. That feeling. And it's going to be much more exciting than the 70s. But I think later on in life, the music I was into was very much the whole Joy Division, The Cure, Depeche Mode, but I was very versatile. I loved everything that was a bit maybe both electronic music in more challenging forms than synth pop, but I also liked that pop music could come in new dresses and that we could use the contemporary technology to do something that has maybe been done before, but do it in new ways with new sounds.
So when you first created music, were you really fully aware about creating something new? Because in different societies, there are societies that seem to copy stuff and they go along that path. And there are societies that want to always create something new. And as a teenager at school, it's not like no one wanted to be a certain pop star. They wanted to be their own pop star. Do you see the difference? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think it just felt like everything was possible suddenly in kind of the whole post-punk thing when pop music suddenly I found interesting pop music, I found interesting experimental music, I found interesting, you know, music in any form. And I was like, this whole field of everything being open for experimentation in some or like tweaks of the old stuff. I mean, I remember hearing some of the records that I heard as a very small child were the Beach Boys. But when I heard Autobahn with Kraftwerk, I was like, oh wow, Beach Boys in electronic form, you know? It's all, I don't know. It just felt like we needed to kind of recreate some of our past, but also look what could be done in the future.
I think that's a really fantastic I think it's a really true thing that Beach Boys is Kraftwerk in Kraftwerk are the Beach Boys in electronic form. Because Brian Wilson was such a sort of technical whiz about sound and putting together certain vocals, which is he did to amazing effect. And I think in that sense, it did have the relation to the technical area. When you say you were, as a child, very interested in, I'm going to call it making things, you know, and creating certain, I don't know if they were instruments, but you're basically creating things that can create sound. What was the impulse for doing that initially?
It was, I couldn't leave electronics alone. So I had to kind of pick them apart to see how they worked, and they never worked again. So I had to kind of, and it was also something around that time. It's before the first, you know, personal computers that you could also build or assemble as kits. So it was, you could build tone generators, you could build stuff that was blinking in the night, and you could, it was a thing. It was like a hobby thing that you could get into in the 70s. And I think, for me, it clicked when I understood that this can be musical instruments. This is my future.
I mean, one thing that you're really known for is your generosity to other artists. You will help out people on their journey to become an artist. Was there anyone that helped you out?
Yeah, I guess I mean we were when I played in all those early bands and stuff, we were like a small group of people in Tromsø who met at these like rock clubs and played our music to each other. And also I remember also the older generation, like I mean how much older were they, like maybe 3 years older at that time, he's like teenage, the old guy, he's 19, you know, and it's like, there was also always a generosity. I think because the scene was so small, there wasn't this thing about competition because none of us were going anywhere. We were not looking at stardom. We were just like having fun and playing music to each other. So I think that was maybe a thing in the culture that I grew up in, that you were well received and you were taken care of.
What role has the nature, the fact that it's dark half the year, and the fact that you live in a very northern, I mean, I think Tromsø is in the Arctic Circle, isn't it? Or just on the edge
yes,
of the Arctic Circle.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. So what role does the nature and where Tromsø is and the distance from Oslo, which is enormous, because people don't realize sometimes that Norway is, you know, it's such a long country. So the distance from, you know, like the main civilization, you're really out on your own. And what role does that play in the development of music in Tromsø?
Well, I think when me and my friends in our teens, and we started discovering all this music and importing all this music from the UK and Europe and the US, mail order. And then when we started combining all these like almost futurist dreams of how the world was going to be, it was very easy for us to look at Tromsø as this satellite, like this space station, this Arctic space station that just sat there in the middle of nowhere, but it was still enough here that we could, you know, be connected to the world and observe it. Because I remember we were like, when I later started traveling and met people from around the world, I remember especially in the UK, people were like, what, you're into that music and that music? That's unheard of. You can't do that. You have to be with that tribe or that tribe. And I was like, no, I've been sitting at the edge of the world looking at all the interesting stuff, and I do my own selection of what's interesting. But I think the nature part of it has been very central. We were like always out in nature or climbing mountains or using our surroundings. But I don't think we ever connected that to the more urban, if you can call them that, interests we had. That was a different world. But of course, it must have colored the way we think. And one friend told me that most electronic, Norwegian electronic music has all these open spaces in it, in all these different genres, from ambient to some of the new disco stuff. There's a lot of open space on top of all the more dense elements. And I think maybe that's something that people outside can pick out, that we do like open spaces because we're born in them.
One thing that you seem to have done throughout your career, which I think is really fascinating, and I don't know whether it's been a choice or it's been something that's just happened, but you've sort of stayed an underground artist. How aware have you been of, in a sense, staying true to your own expression?
I think maybe I always wanted to change what I do in order to make it, keep it interesting. And I guess I've been also afraid of being trapped in a too successful career, if you know what I mean. Then I would have to go out there and do that over and over again. And I couldn't do that. So I think a combination of wanting to keep my distance from too much pressure, but also be free to create the music I want to. And also I wanted to do this for a long time. And that's that it's easier when you can just go on and go on, I guess.
I mean, there's been other artists that have come out from Norway throughout your career, but in a sense, they've all been pretty much inspired by you. And, you know, they may have gone and become a little bit bigger in terms of success, whatever that means. So You're viewed very much as the person that started it all in Norway, aren't you? You're very much the sort of the main focus for a lot of people that come up in Norway. What sort of responsibility do you feel for that? And also, back to this, you know, generosity of spirit thing, how much does that play into your generosity?
Well, I've always been happy to see people do well and do their thing. And I guess I'm kind of proud of what all these friends of mine, or like younger artists who have like come up and developed and just follow their own path. I love the way that has been spreading and having success, whatever that is, as you say. And I think it's necessary to nurture each other in that way. Otherwise, we could just get stuck in these like loops of negativity. Yeah, I think people have done well.
One of the projects that you've done along the way has been this illumination, Chilluminati, and there's a surprise story about a Hollywood star who's an electronic fan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. We were on tour in the early 2000s, I guess, DJing all over the world. And when we played in Moscow, we played at this club in Moscow. We wanted to sit at the table next to the DJ booth, but we were told that you can't do that; it's reserved. And that was actually the actor Jim Carrey had reserved the table because he wanted to sit there with his entourage. And he was very much into electronic music, dance music.
Did you have a discussion with him?
Between playing and like leaning over and discussing whatever, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Sometimes, and I don't know why I'm surprised, because sometimes I'm surprised when someone that you don't connect is then into electronic music, but why not? That seems like ridiculous for me to say that. Okay, I want to get back to these characters and how the music has come out of these characters, and how that the music has changed. So what do you see that has this project, and including Pyramids on the Moon, which is a sort of autobiographical thing that you have on Patreon that you can read, and I will show you that I've been reading it. Oh. it's like a lot of pages. I want to know what development in the music you have seen in yourself and what changes you have seen in yourself because of this.
For the Waveform project, which is the fool doing his experiments, that was a way for me to leave the whole idea of the club and the dance music setting, because for me, I think always, or throughout all these years, I always looked at dance music as functional in its basis form. Like, you can do whatever, and you can be as experimental or commercial or whatever in the way you produce dance music. But if people don't dance to it, it doesn't work. So it's kind of functional in that way. It's a framework for it. And so I think for me to do the more beatless or whatever floaty music or ambient or whatever has freed me from the settings that I'm usually put in. And that's been it's been kind of a revelation to be able to play different venues with that project and listen to music in different settings. And that's been liberating in a way. The most unexpected thing was when I went back and thought, okay, what if I had continued my journey of being into alternative pop music from my teens. So I think what has stopped me from that before was that I always wanted to move on, and everything had to be something. If it worked, I had to break it. I had to fix it. So to leave stuff alone and to say that, yeah, it's okay to make melodic songs and produce them and perform them and see what that becomes. For me, that took a lot of not holding back, but this itch to destroy it had to be tamed in a way.
This is the Neon Teardrops.
That's the Neon Teardrops, which is the project that I've been very surprised by, because I put out as part of my project, I put out like a 7-inch single, and I faked the copyright to 1987, and suddenly I found it in the alternative charts in Germany. I was like, what's going on? How do I deal with this? So it became something that I followed it up to see where it ended up. So now I'm releasing an album with the project in September.
I mean, it's much more, the music seems much more introspective, and it's, I don't know. I think it sort of fits with this idea of looking back and sort of analyzing yourself and more in a sense soulful. I don't mean it in terms of soul music, but in a more soulful thing. How much of an effect has it had on you that this is something that is really appreciated and people have really connected to it?
Yeah, well, I'm a bit surprised. And yeah, and maybe the one thing that's different with that is I've never used my voice, singing voice, ever before I started experimenting with this project. I did find an old tape from the 80s, and I was like listening to it, and I was in a lot of bedroom studio collaborations of like, what was this project, who's singing on this? And I was like, wow, that's actually me. Did I use my voice? And so I thought, okay, that's the sound source I've never explored in my life. It's not electronic. So I thought, okay, let's try and use that as a thing. Try and use vocals on my music. And I was like, that was a big challenge, because that was, as you say, suddenly everything was very personal, and the human voice and expressing yourself through your voice. I mean, I can talk for hours, but using it to express something emotional through singing was very, very alien to me. It was not something that was felt natural. It had to kind of be, it had to be worked on. And that's one thing also, that people seem to connect to music with vocals in a very different way than instrumental music. And to me, that was also like a bit of a, maybe I'm very nerdy, but I was a bit surprised that you need to have a human connection in order to think music is emotional. Yeah.
But yeah, I think it's always been, for me, it's always been the other way around, that I was surprised that you don't need vocals. Yeah. And the music could be really hard. It's a mental overdrive, could be hard, and you still make a connection and it still touches you in some way. So I think mine was a sort of the other journey. The other thing, of course, and I think this is a reflection of music, and it depends on language barriers and so on, and of course lyrics can often trigger a connection. Now the album's called Testimony, and It is a direct result of what we started to talk about at the beginning, of looking at these three personalities, sort of parts of you, of what you could have been, and the mental overdrive side, and then your water, the feminine, more feminine side. As a technique, do you think it's something that you can repeat or is this an absolute one-off?
I still use the writing as this kind of imagining. I don't know where it's going to end. It's just I've written a lot, and you've read it actually, and I think as a process, I will continue to do that to see what happens and where these things could lead me, because I don't plan on what I'm writing or what kind of music I'm making. I'm just play it by the moment. So I think I will continue to try and use the storytelling as a key to unlock stuff, to see where it can lead me, both creatively and personally. It's like it's a very good tool, and whatever trauma's back there, it certainly will come out. I know. I know this. Definitely.
That's going to be the great masterpiece. It's definitely going to be the most amazing masterpiece. The other thing that you've connected this to, which I find really fascinating, is not only the AI version of the feminine side of yourself, the writing, the autobiography, inverted commas, those things, but also NFTs in terms of art. Mm. So how does that work within the whole?
Yeah, well, that's another thing that... As I said, I'm always curious about whatever comes up in possibilities within technology. So when crypto art came in on the side, I was like, so how can this be connected? How can I use this to express? Because there's a lot of visual work as well in there, because I do take a lot of photographs and do some visual works. But they still need to be connected to the story in some way, I feel. So in the same way as I use some of the musical output as part of posting the texts, I use the visual bits to post whatever I feel is going to. But it's very much connected to the story. It's very much something I had one character also take a lot of photographs, so. So some of those are posted as NFTs.
One thing on that, there's the YouTube video of you giving your speech at I presume it is at the Art at University, or at least it's for them there. And at the end, you talk about an apology that you make to women and as a just as a man, not that anything, you know, massive had happened, but just as a man, and that the male privilege, you know, it's, I suppose it's the white privilege is also part of the thing, but it's all within then, and you make an apology. Can you tell me about that and why you decided to do that and what the reaction to that was after this lecture, if anyone came to you to talk about it?
Well, yes, that talk that I had to sum up my project, I had some time to reflect on what I've been doing and had some new ideas about it. And I very much, my personal project process, I could very much relate to the male role. Like, who am I as a white male in the world today? And what legacy do I have to either get rid of or defend? And I think the whole idea about having an identity is I very much believe that identities are in flux all the time. I do not believe in stoic people who are always themselves. I mean, you can be always yourself, but if it doesn't change, then you're not. And I think defining in these days, like politically and just for society to find definitions of the changing role that I and others as a male person should develop into. I mean, we can't. There's a lot of stuff to say sorry about in the way that the world has been working. And so for me, it was important to say to use that and take that to myself and say, I also want to take this opportunity to say sorry for whenever I have consciously or unconsciously misused my privilege. And I will work very hard to understand what my role will be in the future. And I think that's a discussion that should be going on. Is this a job for feminism? It's not really. It's like, it's a job for men to look at themselves and discuss, what is it we're going to be? What do we need to get rid of? And how to adapt to a new world where everyone is equal?
I think that's a fascinating end, because also if we look at young people today and the fluidity in their identity and how they perceive themselves, it's completely different to your generation, and completely different even more to the generation that I came from. And I think what you've done and what you've achieved with this is a sort of renewal of the old white man. Do you know what I mean? I'm not calling you an old white man. You are so young.
You can.
But it is. It's a way of renewal, and it's a way of an older generation being able to connect and not disconnect. And you mentioned about polarity in society. And one of the big polarities in society now is young versus old. And I think it's the duty also of older people to reassess themselves and to look at themselves in a way that fits in what the modern society is. So Per Martinson, I found all your stuff absolutely fascinating. And I loved, you know, as a writer myself, I love looking at the characters and following those and seeing what similarities within me or feelings within me that they brought out. So congratulations. I really think that's a really great piece of work. And of course, with the music, I mean, it's something that has really taken you on to another level. And I think that is a massive achievement to have done that. So I wish you all the best for your future. And I'm going to see you in Tromsø again one day.
Thank you very much.
We're going to have a look at your feminine side.
Yeah. Yes. I'm here. I'll be here.
Okay, Per. Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much, Steve.
We made USAA insurance for veterans like James. When he found out how much USAA was helping members save, he said,
"It's time to switch.
We'll help you find the right coverage at the right price. USAA. What you're made of, we're made for." Restrictions apply.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from LA. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more.
Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.